Blog Talk Radio.
I missed it.
I did. I was wondering if you had something in store for me, you know, like Hot Potato or, you know, Funkified, No Vaseline. You were throwing with
Excuse
me.
No Vaseline. I'm L7. What the hey?
You don't know Ice Cube, No Vaseline? I'm finna pull your card. I am pulling your card. That is like only the greatest diss rap ever.
I'm sorry. That sounds too much like that hip hop music. That go go music they listen to here in DC. I'm sorry, there in DC. We're here in Baltimore. We don't listen to that
on
the trash can stuff over there. So I don't know about that.
You getting your card pulled? No Vaseline.
Who does it?
The greatest.
Who does it?
IQ. This is IQ.
That's West Coast.
This is Eazy-E. But it ain't about the West Coast. It is the greatest album ever. You need to check out No Vaseline. And I can't believe you've never heard it. Come on. Really?
I'm gonna have to check it. I'm gonna have to check
you
it.
You ain't playing Death Certificate?
Sorry.
You've never listened to Ice Cube's Death Certificate? I am mind blown.
That
is like one of the greatest rap albums of the 90s. Next you're going to tell
than...
me you ain't never heard What's My Name.
Oh, sure, I've heard that.
Okay, then you going to give me like a stroke.
I mean, I was saying that last night myself. Of course, I live alone, so my answer was was an affirmative.
Yes, please. Thank you, man. I have another. What's the left hand say to the right hand? Thank you, may I have another? But your assignment, should you choose it, is to immediately, when the show is over, listen to No Vaseline by Ice Cube. And then I will grant you your card back. You will get your ghetto pass back at that point. But right now, I'm snatching it.
Okay.
Lord okay. Jesus, you broke my brain. You really, truly did.
I'm sorry. I take it. But you know, I have thrown things at you that you have never heard of before. So don't even go down that road with me, young lady.
Yes. But this is No Vaseline. That's like saying you've never heard What's My Name.
Okay.
This is significant. This ain't no Chuck Brown go-go shit. There ain't nobody out of the DMV ain't heard. No, this is Cube. This is Death Certificate.
Mm-hmm.
That means you never heard us? Lord. You've heard Steady Mobbin', right?
Yeah.
Okay, okay, but see, you know what? Vaseline is above Steady Mobbin'.
And
you've heard today was,
you say so.
You heard today was a good day, right?
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right. You're redeeming yourself. Okay, because I was finna have an intervention, quite frankly.
You know I love the Ghetto Boys, though, right?
Well, yeah, obviously.
I'm not talking about my neighbors. I'm talking about...
Oh,
talking
my bad.
The rap group.
I bet you were talking about the people who steal your bike straight out of your garage and they come riding past your house. Try and sell you some bootleg candy for some bootleg organization. them $5 boxes of York peppermint patties that got three of them in there.
Oh, my God. Did I tell you about them that used to come knocking on the door selling candy for the kids?
No, you didn't. But I don't even entertain it. I'll give them like a dollar donation. Just be like, thanks, but no thanks. Ain't no way. There's no way in this world I'm spending $5 on a box of bootleg peppermint patties. Your peppermint patties.
No.
And the peppermint part is all hard because they don't know the your peppermint patty recipe. and chocolate crumbles because they've been sitting in some box since the last fundraiser? Hell no. Here, baby, you can have a dollar.
and the chocolate is white because it's maybe some cheap, very cheap.
Because it's 7 years old. And I act like my grandmother. You know how your grandmother would take out her little change purse and dip in there and bring out like a stack of five $1 bills folded, and then the rest was like dimes, nickels, and pennies. That's what I do. Yeah, baby, you can have these little 20 nickels.
or, you know, I still remember back in the day when we was, actually, it was after I was out of school, but kids were selling candy for school and come up. What do you mean you want a dollar for a candy bar? A dollar? A dollar. A dollar. Are you out your mind? A dollar for a candy bar? A dollar. It's one candy bar. You're asking for a whole dollar for a candy bar. A dollar. Now, today, you look for those, dollar candy bars because that's
right.
Cheap.
Right. Now, understand we're talking about two different things. We're talking about the little bootleg wannabe boys and girls club that don't exist where they're just trying to get for your money. And then the school fundraisers where they're selling like, do you guys have Annie's pretzel dogs out there?
Yep.
Yeah, a box of four Annie pretzel dogs for $16. And I'm like, you know what? I could drive you over to the shopping center. Use my gas and buy you like seven of them, and it's still less than $16.
Right. And your coworkers that try to hand you the what I call the catalog of diabetes for you to buy some stuff for the kids, and then get mad at you because you're taking your time trying to decide what you want. Oh, you only gonna buy one box?
Right. Well, see, now I have a Girl Scout, so you know I hit my coworkers up hard. But even Girl Scout is ridiculous. We've been selling Girl Scout cookies for 5 years now, and they're smaller, and there's less of them, and they're $4 a box.
Mm-hmm. But look, I know what you're talking about with the bootleg candy, because you can tell when the fundraiser comes by with a box, a cardboard box that they can use, they can make a handle out of the top of it, and it's got... It's printing. There's printing on the box. You know what I'm saying? There's printing on the box that says the candy name.
The box says kitchen scratched out.
No. I'm talking about the legit ones. The legit ones, they have, like, you know, the container, and they open the box up, and there's a selection. You know, and you got to look carefully because you know you wanted the chocolate crispy, but you picked up the chocolate with nuts, and you get all mad because by the time you can catch up with the person,
you get... Yeah. Yeah, I know
they've sold the rest of the crispies.
Yep. We sold those in high school, and I would always buy the one that was the Crunch Bar knockoff because that was good.
That's the bomb. That's the bomb.
Yes.
That's the bomb.
That's
now,
the bomb.
That is legit.
They make those anymore.
No, they do. They do. Okay. I used to get them. I still get them. Yeah. Now, when they show up at your door and they have a Royal Farms plastic milk carton, milk container
that's
carton.
That's what I'm talking about. Yes.
And in the milk carton, there is the milk crate. There's a Girl Scout cookies. And there's a couple Reese's Pieces bags. There's like
them
some Lorna Doone.
Them hard ass peppermint patty. York peppermint patty knockoffs in the white box.
Right. Those are the ones when you go, man, get out of here.
That's the ones where I say, hold on, baby, let me get my change purse. Here go one nickel, that's five, and ten, and three. Oh, you made me lose my count. Five.
Oh, now I got to start all over again.
Right. That's what I swear to God I tell my grandmother.
But you know, to me, this just brings back to me one of the, if not the best episode of the Boondocks, when Riley was selling the candy.
I remember that one.
That's where I got this from.
This wasn't no movie. The smart thing was to say yes, get up, and leave the room. But then I thought to myself, what if this was a movie? Look, you. The plane you flew in on, them shoes, the socks with the bell on it, your gay ass straight accent, them cheap ass cigars, your yuck mouth teeth, your hairpiece, your chocolate, Guy Ritchie, Prince William, the Queen. This is America. My president is black and my Lambo is blue, nigga. Now get the out of my hotel room. And if I see you in the street, I'm slapping the out of you.
Right.
You have got, when you get home, you got to find a way to watch the episode of the Boondocks of Riley selling candy. That will make you
cry. First of all, let's give props to Regina for that. Number one.
Oh. I give props to Regina.
If y'all don't know, that's
Regina all the time.
Right. That's Regina mouthing that. But second of all, here's what I never understood. Why they beep out like the F word, but you can say nigga all day. All day, every day. Can I please tell you what's more offensive to me?
Well, before we use that as the segue, I must say that that's the difference between watching the Boondocks at 11 o'clock on Cartoon Network and watching it at 1 o'clock on Cartoon Network. Because at 1 o'clock, it's off. You don't get no bleeps. But at 11 o'clock, they think some kids might still be up. So
but they bleep out every other word.
Yeah. It's like, I watch I'm a Law and Order fanatic. The original show is the best show. Love it. Lose my mind. And WGN out of Chicago plays it four times a day.
Right.
East Coast time, 11, 12, 2, and no, I'm sorry. Yeah, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and 3 o'clock.
You know what?
10 to 11, 11 to 12, 1 to 2, and 2 to 3. Okay.
I kid you not. When I wasn't working and I was a stay-at-home mom, I could watch Law and Order almost every single freaking hour, starting at 10 o'clock in the morning. And I'm not even kidding.
Yeah.
Between all the channels the shows on and all the episodes. Because, you know, Law and Order, the regular one, was on for 20 years before Jay Leno effed it up.
Right.
And I'm still going to find him and beat his ass for that. Trust me.
Yep.
But you can watch Law and Order 12 hours a day if you really want to.
And it's so much fun to reminisce. Like, I just, like, the other day I was watching an episode that was from 1997. Okay? Put this in perspective. Wow. 1997, and the detectives got a page and had to pull over at a payphone to call in to find out what the page was about. 1997.
And it had been on for a minute in 1997, because I think it first aired in
1990. Right. So, there you go. That just tells you that as late as 1997, cell phones were not the de facto piece of equipment for everybody. And it added to the plot because, you know, they couldn't, they had to pull over to get information, which delayed them finding the suspect. But anyway, I was saying that to say, I watched WGN and, okay, Law and Order came on Thursday nights on NBC at 10 o'clock. Broadcast network. Freaking WGN will air these shows four times a day, and they bleep out things like "damn."
Oh, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me right now?
I tell you the truth. And you will see them, like when you watch it, what they also do, which I think is hilarious, is they'll blur out things. Like, they were interviewing a woman in a lingerie shop, and behind her was a wall dummy with lingerie on it, and the breasts were blurred out.
Like, I bet you they have a field day with special victims unit.
Special victims unit
is off the chain.
It was slamming. I'm like, wait a minute, did they just bleep out? You can go to bleep? I mean, did he just say that you can go to bleep? Or this is 2014? I'm pretty sure, you know, so I'm thinking, is WGN like a Christian network?
Right. No, it's in Chicago.
In the late 80s, I worked part-time for the local Fox TV station here, and they at that time they just did Fox programming. They weren't a Fox network, so they would do the Fox primetime lineup in the evenings. But during the day, they would show like old movies and cartoons. And the 2 days after I left the job, I was waiting for my next assignment. I'm sitting home watching TV, and the 12 o'clock movie comes on, and what did they show? Watermelon Man. Okay. And someone someone had completely forgotten to edit Watermelon Man for midday broadcasting. So you've never seen Watermelon Man. which was directed by Mario Van Peebles' daddy. Right? Melvin Van Peebles.
Sweet, badass. So you can imagine.
Right. The word nigga was freely used in the movie. I'm sitting there watching this movie on television, and I dove for my telephone to call in to my employer, at my former supervisor, John Cole. Watermelon Man is running unedited. And I'm sitting there watching the TV, and they quickly, like in the middle of a critical scene, I think it was the scene where they were starting, Godfrey Cambridge was starting to get phone calls at his desk, at his office, I mean, sorry, at his house. The TV goes blank, and then we interrupt this program for a public service announcement due to technical difficulties. Watermelon Man is running.
Like, on the off chance that I'm at home and I catch the cycle, the midday MSNBC show that I really don't like. But, you know, because they are young hosts, you know, they're our generation, they try to be edgy, you know, and they keep showing clips where they don't bleep it out. Like, they were trying to make this point about the barbershop and how black men go there to talk politics. And, I mean, you know better than I know what goes on in a black barbershop. So they jumped from, I think, Coming to America. And they were talking, the Cassius Clay scene. And Eddie Murphy's character said, "Do you believe this shit?" And I was like, "Wait a minute, what? Did they really just say that?" And they do that, and they get hung up because they'll play rap songs too because they're trying to be edgy. And then the next thing you know, the next day they have to, "We apologize for the viewers that overheard the N-word during the bump." It's rap. It's not MC Hammer or Heavy D. I mean, shoot, you played A Tribe Called Quest looped with Ice Cube. Of course somebody's going to say nigga.
Right. It's going to come through. You can pretend like you didn't see it, hear it, but it's out there now.
Right. Oh, look, this is Snoop Doggy Dogg. I wonder what could possibly go, well, let's just put this in. Yeah, okay. You run with that. Next thing you know, beep, you got a public service announcement.
But that was so funny. I'll never forget that. Like, you can hear her drop the phone and hear her running across the floor to the out the office to get to the studio.
Oh, shit. And then you hear heels. Click, 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 click.
Slam! The door opens.
And then, beep! Okay. So, let's talk about, sadly, more serious topics. The trial, the Florida trial over the weekend. How'd that work out for you? Right. So, you know what? Let me just point out something. Let us be clear. I don't want to hear anybody saying, well, you know, he's probably going to get 60 years or whatever. The child that was killed got zero justice, just so you guys understand that. He was found guilty on 3 counts of attempted murder. That was the attempted murder of the 3 other people that were in the car.
Yes.
So, Jordan's family got no justice at all. And it's not good enough to say, well, you know what, he's going to be going to jail for life and he can't get any more life. It's not about, with the exception of Ariel Castro, it's not about how many life sentences you can put on top of a life sentence. Of course, if they sentence him to 2 years, we're going to have a problem. But at this point, he's got 60 years. It's not about him getting another 20. It's about him doing time for his crime. He literally got away with murder. Literally.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I don't buy this bullshit that he, you know, he feared for his life. I'm sorry, with the weapon of the volume button? And if you say they thought, he says he thought he had a gun, he didn't know it was, if you hadn't got your ass out of the car being obnoxious to too loud music, or once you got out the car, you put your ass back in it, what were you to fear? Finish pumping your gas and go. OMG. When by all accounts, nobody was brandishing a weapon. By all accounts. And if you were scared and feared for your life because you didn't know, you know, if they had a gun or not, get your ass in your car and leave. Because guess what? If they did have a gun, and you went back to your car and rolled back up on them, we'd be telling a different story.
Exactly right.
You know, if you're that scared that you don't know, then why are you putting yourself in that position? Same with Zimmerman. He didn't know what he had. He was scared, so he's so scared that he didn't leave, both of them. And you know why they didn't leave? Because stand your ground makes people think that they're freaking Superman. stand your ground.
So,
but you know. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so let's be clear again on where we are for those ill-informed or wanting to hear the whole story as we see it, audience members. You have a situation where a man, a grown-ass man, a 46-year-old man, attends the wedding reception of his son. He gets drunk. By all accounts, people at the reception, his fiance that was in the car with him, he's drunk. They roll up to a gas station where there are four young men in a car minding their business, playing their music loudly. The man says to his fiance, "I hate that black ghetto music," or loud ghetto music, loud black ghetto music, something to that effect. Tells the kids to turn the music down. They comply. Now, while this is going on, something happens and the kids turn the music back up. They are in no shape or form blocking this man's car in.
So here's what happened. He was still jawjacking. They had complied, and he didn't want to shut his mouth and mind his own business. So according to the mother, her son, well, according to the friends told the mother this, that he was like, well, you know what? You ain't the police. You ain't this. You ain't that. I ain't got to listen to you. I'm going to turn my music right back on. And not only am I going to turn it back on, I'm going to turn it back on louder. Which is not an unreasonable scenario. You know, because you think about it. Wait a minute. Who does fool think he is? I got something for him. I'm turning it up to 70. How you like me now?
Right. Now, reasonable people. Reasonable adult males, realizing that they're dealing with some probably, and I'm going to take and play devil's advocate for a second, some obnoxious teenage kids would say, you know
right.
what, F that, and get in their car or stay in the car, start the car and leave. Because,
and reasonable
trust
adult,
me,
adult males, once the request has been complied with, shut their face, maybe even say thank you.
Stop stroking their own, you know where, get in the car, start the car up, and leave. But at that point where they turn the music back up, Mr. Dunn reaches into his glove compartment and pulls out his pistol and fires at the car. Then gets out of his car and walks over to their car and shoots into the car again. Then goes back to his car with his fiance, leaves the scene, goes back to their hotel room, and orders a pizza.
Right, but what is this bitch doing during all of this? Eating pizza too?
She's eating pizza too, and from what I understand, she was concerned that they should call the police, and he was telling her no, wasn't necessary. Now, given these facts, that are not, these are the facts that aren't in dispute from everything I've read. These facts are not in dispute. A jury of supposed right-thinking people in Florida come back with 3 counts of attempted murder, guilty, discharging a weapon, a firearm, guilty, but not guilty of first-degree murder on the kid he actually killed. In his testimony and in his statement to the police when he was arrested, Mr. Dunn says he thought he saw what looked like the barrel of a shotgun come out of the car and point toward him. This is what made him shoot. Now,
see,
fiance said she didn't.
I wouldn't
have gotten out the car.
I wouldn't have gotten out the car.
Right.
I'm not going to come closer to the shotgun I believe I see.
Right. I'm not. If I reach into my glove compartment for my gun, I'm shooting, and then I'm going to stay in my car and call 911. But no shots his way, no shots heard from any other weapon, no shotgun, no rifle, no long-barreled, any found in the kid's car. Now, the defense argued that because so much time passed from between the shooting and the arrest, the kids could have gotten rid of the gun. But whose fault is that? If I'm going to play devil's advocate, which I like to do sometimes, if there was a gun, if there was a weapon in their car, whose fault is it that time went by and they got rid of it? Because he didn't call the police right away. He left the scene, went back to his hotel room, and ordered pizza as if nothing had happened. But
yeah,
also,
isn't it my understanding? Let me ask you a case question. Is it true that after the incident, did the car just sit there, or did they call the 911 because they knew that, you know, one of them had, a couple of them had been hit with bullets? I mean, the police had to arrive there relatively quickly at some point, correct?
Yes. I don't know, and I have to be honest, I don't know who called the police, but if I'm in this car, if you're in this car, and you've just been shot at repeatedly, the last thing I think you're thinking of is, oh, we've got to get rid of our gun. Even if you have a gun, you have one person in the car who's dead.
Right, and where are
the
you going to get rid of it to?
Exactly.
You're going to throw it in the garbage can in front of the gas station. You're going to throw it in the little garbage receptacles they have at the pump. You're not going to run 17 miles away to dump a gun and come back. So my point being is, once that area was cordoned off, it would have been found.
Right. But when we have a situation where we have just been shot at, and one of the people in the car in the back seat, not even the person who had
right.
access to the music, is dead.
Right. Yeah, you're not going to be worrying about tossing no gun unless,
right.
unless you're hardcore gangster, which these
unless you're hardcore
not.
Gangster. And if you're hardcore gangster, when someone shoots at your car, you're going to shoot back. And I'll tell you a quick story. I worked for a gentleman who moved to D.C., white guy, moved to D.C. years ago. This was well over 25 years ago, from some area, some very secluded area. I don't remember where, but he was not used to being – he moved to the hood part of D.C., southeast D.C. anyway. And his fiance at the time was – he told me was reluctant to come visit him because the neighborhood was so bad. And he finally convinces her to come visit him. And she comes over, she spends the night, and the next day they get up and her car has been stolen. Okay, so as if this wasn't bad enough, they take a report, you know, they call the police, get a report taken, and a couple weeks later, he's on the news where a car matching the description of the girlfriend's car was used in a drive-by shooting at a school, a high school. In D.C. So he contacts the police. They check into it. Sure enough, it's her car. They recovered the car. He has to go get the car out of impound after they finish going over the evidence and everything. So he says he's there, get the car out of impound, and they bring the car up, and he's about to get in the car, and he notices all these bullet holes on the outside of the car. And he says to the police, the news really got this wrong. We were told this car was used in a drive-by. And the cop says, yeah, that's right. He said, well, we thought that meant that the people who stole the car drove past the school and shot out of the car. And the cop said, yeah, that's right. And he said, well, why are there bullet holes in the car if the driver, the people in the car were shooting? And the cop said, oh, you don't think they didn't shoot back, do you?
Right.
So if you hardcore, you whether someone gets knocked down or not, you shooting back if you have a weapon in your vehicle.
Right.
And since there was no weapon found,
then the defense doesn't wash.
Right, none of it washed. But sadly, the people on the jury could not bring themselves to say yes to first degree murder. And
there were deadlocked.
I don't understand
who
does what's going
that?
On. I don't understand what's going on in Florida that you can't say. You can't shoot for a lesser charge to get a conviction, because the same thing with in the George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin trial, the prosecution was aiming for premeditated first degree murder, and that is almost if not impossible to prove in a heat argument, heat of a moment
right,
situation. Obviously,
right. Now there was no way that it was premeditated, and they're trying to get down to, but what is premeditation? Is it time? Is it 5 minutes? Is it 10 minutes? To me, no. I mean, you're still in the heat of the moment, even though the moment was 10 minutes ago. Because I don't know if you're like me, when I get pissed off, I don't just turn on and off. You know, I was like, oh hell, did she just really say that? You know, 5 minutes later, I'm still walking and cussing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to me, premeditated would have been, oh, did he just shoot at us? Well, let's follow him. Let's see where this punk lives. Okay, well, I'm just going to wait here. So I'm going to go home and get my gun, and I'm going to come back, and when he leaves for work, I'm going to get him. To me, that's premeditated. You know,
see, but to me, premeditation is, oh, I'm going to reach into my glove compartment and take out the weapon that I have and shoot at this car. This wasn't we're fighting and we're struggling and I put my weapon and I shoot. And as much as I think George Zimmerman was guilty as all hell is hot, I still will say that proving premeditation and in a situation where this man got out of his car expecting to confront somebody and scare them, punk them down, and then caught more of an ass whooping than he was expecting, I don't call that premeditation. But when you reach into your glove compartment, when you are not being physically or verbally attacked, and you lean out your window and shoot at a car, then get out of your car and walk over to the other car and shoot again, I don't know what the legal definition of that is, but to me, that's premeditation and deliberate act. And the jury could not get themselves together to say that was premeditation.
Well, see, but we just answered our own question, because if you and I were on the jury, we would be at odds, because I still see that all as heat of the moment. Everybody's amped up. They're hollering back and forth. You know, it happens right then.
It does. But you have an opportunity to walk away, to drive away. You're not in the midst of a confrontation. You can reach, you have enough presence of mind and time to be sitting in the driver's seat and reach over, open your glove compartment, and pull out a gun. Now, I don't know how many times you've been pulled over by the police and you have to reach in your glove compartment to find your registration and think, oh, shit, is my registration in my glove compartment? And you got, even if your glove compartment is pristine clean, you got to fumble for it. Especially
Yeah,
if you're
still,
in the driver's seat.
Still, to me, that's all still part of what he did to me is still all heat of the moment. If he had driven off and come back, I'd have a different opinion.
But he got out the car and went back for a second bite at his apple.
It's still the heat of the moment of the argument. They're still amped up arguing right there at the scene, jaw-jacking back and forth.
If you go with that, and I'm not, we can argue this, and we will argue this all the time from now on, probably. But when there was no other weapon,
I think that's the same thing that happened in that jury room. Because you and I are both very reasonable people,
I'm kind of reasonable. I'm kind of smart.
So we're seeing it two different ways. Now that said, I believe, despite what I think. I believe if the prosecutor had been better at their job, they could have argued it in such a way that convinced people that it was premeditated, using the arguments that you're using. I think that the line is so thin that a smarter, more capable prosecutor would have been able to work it so that it lines up with your thoughts on it.
Maybe. But you also got to look at it from the standpoint, if, and I got to use the My Cousin, I know it's a movie, but I got to use the My Cousin Vinny thing. If you go in to rob a store and then you shoot and kill someone while you're in the store, you're going away for robbery and first degree murder. As far as I know, in most states, you're still guilty of first degree murder.
Because it was committed during the commission of another crime. So adds a whole layer to it.
Right. So then taking that into consideration, if you're guilty, if I can find you guilty of other crimes like attempted murder and discharging your weapon, then in the course of those crimes, someone dies and you should be guilty of first degree murder as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that. I can just see how it didn't work in this situation. That said, they should have been able to, and then if they can't get it to first degree, they should have then been able to do a lesser charge of manslaughter.
Or second degree murder.
And that's,
first degree is premeditation.
Degree.
Right. And, second degree is not premeditation. And if there's any lawyers listening, or people with legal minds or legal opinions, and you want to chime in on that, then come on in, please, and answer. And answer. But there, murder happened, and they couldn't find him guilty. Now, each charge of attempted murder carries 20 years. So he's going to do 60 years.
Yeah, he's going to die.
Discharging his weapon, it carries a maximum of 15 years. So he's looking at a maximum of 75 years in jail.
And I think they should have got him on some type of under the influence charge, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though there's no witness to him operating a vehicle while under the influence.
But he admitted it. The problem to me is the Tanya Grand Law. That's just the bottom line.
But that's what it comes down to. That's exactly what it comes down to.
Because Florida has got this wacky justice system anyway. And then you've got this Stand Your Ground Law, and all it does is confuse the jury. Because all you have to say is, I thought my life was in danger. And this has happened twice. And that has been countrywide publicity. And both times, it's been like they can't come to an agreement because, it was self-defense. No, it wasn't him. Stand your ground. Well, what ground was he standing? It just causes too much confusion because it's not clear cut. It's never clear cut. And I'm pretty sure they didn't intend it to be this way, but it always comes down to he said, she said, unless there's other witnesses. you know. And in this case, there were other witnesses, and that didn't work. But it is, it's he said, she said, because you can't, you can't take emotion through the judicial system. You know, when you have somebody on trial, you can't say you didn't fear for your life. Well, how do you know? You know, if the person says that they feared for their life, you know, common sense may tell us quite differently, George Zimmerman. How do you argue that? You weren't there. You're not that person. You don't know whether they were truly fearful or not. And I think, you know, that I think that's what always happens in these jury rooms, these deliberations, when they come up with these stand your ground laws, because they're not only asked to look at the evidence, but there's emotion involved, because you have to ascertain not only from the evidence, but from the person's emotions, if they really feared for their life or not. And that's subjective.
And it is very subjective. But when you have your fiance sitting in a car with you who testifies on behalf of the prosecution that you never she didn't fearful for her life, and she didn't have a gun. So at what point does a person with a gun who's jawjacking claim that he was in fear of his life, when he's the only one with a gun and he has options to get in the car? I'm sorry, he's already in the car. He has the option to pull away from the scene. And I understand, Lord knows I have a lot of testosterone in my system, and I have been in situations where I clearly could have turned and walked away and didn't. But when you're 46 years old, and you're in this situation, the only reason you do not walk away and you pull your weapon is because you're an idiot and or your brain is swimming in alcohol or some other chemical.
Well, the other thing is, too, it's this fear of the black man, young and old. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just automatically, oh, these are some thugs. If they had been four white college kids, this would have been a different story. And unfortunately,
right.
Black college kids, it would have been the same story.
No, but what if it is four white kids and they're listening to hip-hop music? And he says, I hate that music, and they don't turn it down.
But he's not going to fear and automatically assume that those four white college kids have a shotgun.
Right, and there's no evidence that any of these kids, anything I've seen, there's no evidence that these kids had ever owned a gun.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's just be truthful right here and now. That's his story. He knew damn well that there wasn't no shotgun. Damn well.
Of course not.
That was his little cover his own ass.
Right. Now, some people, and this has been a huge controversy on my Facebook wall, my Facebook status, on a lot of sides. And one of the sides is, okay, well, he was found guilty of something, so you got the glass half full. And I'm saying what they really convicted him of was attempting to kill three people. There is no evidence of guilt for him attempting to kill the fourth person that died and succeeding. And there is no and he's found guilty shooting a car. So the car got more justice than the kid who died.
And there
now, if it's my child, I'm still upset. Because, yeah, he's going away for life, probably for the rest of his life. But I haven't heard, there hasn't been any sentencing yet that I know of. And they haven't come down and said natural life. And we've discussed this on this short, the difference between natural life and life in prison, which, you know, depending on the state, can be 15 to 25 years. Because some states, life is just 15 years. and there's nothing that says no possibility of parole. You know,
in Ohio, it's 1,000 years.
Right. This isn't right. You're gonna say this is the Ariel Castro situation where it's life plus 1,000 years. In case you've forgotten, Ariel Castro was found dead in his cell, and he's still serving 1,000 years plus 14 for life. He ain't coming out. He can't even have visitors at his grave at this point. Not that anybody would want to visit him. But so it hasn't been determined yet whether or not this man has any possibility of ever getting out of prison. But if it's my child, I'm still upset that there has been no justice for my child.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it was a mistrial and they can retry him. But, you know, there is double jeopardy. So they screw it up the next time. You know, that's it. And I don't even know what she's going to go for. I don't know if she's going to go for manslaughter or second degree on the retrial.
You see, this is what confuses me because I know this is 2014 and we just came out of 2013. Back in the 60s and 70s, there were civil rights violations for people who murdered white people who murdered black children, black people during the civil rights movement. If they could not be found guilty of the actual murder, then their civil rights lawyers or the Justice Department could come in and say, and I need to consult some legal minds that I know who might have some different or some real factual information on this. Why hasn't George Zimmerman been found guilty of violating Trayvon Martin's civil rights to have free access to the area he's in and to live life and pursue happiness? Where are the civil rights lawyers, the ACLU, on this case? Because that was an attempt in those days to get justice when justice could not be gotten fairly, especially in the South. And as last time I checked, I know Miami is not considered the South, but the state of Florida is considered the South.
And he admitted to a DUI. Why can't they get him on a DUI too? Throw that in there.
Well, because you can't admit to, you can't, you know, self-incrimination. Fifth Amendment. Yeah. So there was no one that saw him operating the vehicle under the influence. And I don't know, by the time he was arrested, I don't know if the alcohol was out of his system because of all the pizza he'd eaten. You know, but you're talking about a 46-year-old man who shot and killed a teenage boy. And again, the state of Florida was unable to prove that it was murder.
And
to the people,
go ahead.
I was going to say, and to the people who argue that as heinous as this is, there's still a level of too high a level of black on black crime that's not prosecuted. I agree with that, and I think the black-on-black crime issue is way out of control. Way out of control.
It has been.
But what you don't see in the black community is black-on-black crime that goes unpunished when someone is identified as the murderer. It's hard to find someone willing to say, I saw him do it. But when people are brought to justice, there are no hung juries on situations like this. There are no found innocents in situations like this. I live in the hood. Black on black crime, Baltimore, murder rate, very high in the city. But when people are convicted,
they need to crack down on witness intimidation because they know they'll get their house sprayed.
Yeah. Yeah. And not only, if you're lucky, you'll get your house spray painted or windows broken. But there, I mean, the other considerations are people just. Yeah, yeah.
I meant spray with bullets, not paint.
But there's also a lot of apathy in this community, and in this city, and a lot of other cities around. People just don't care, which is sad. But when somebody is brought to trial, you don't hear this, okay, well, Snooki and them were standing on the corner, and Peanut and them rode by, a fight broke out, and Peanut shot and killed Snooki, and was found innocent because it could not be proven that his intent was to shoot Peanut on the corner. You don't hear that. When someone is identified and they're brought to trial, they are usually found guilty. And it's whatever this is, it obviously is not a deterrent because it's still going on. But you don't find situations where people get away with it when it's black on black crime.
But I think even to go deeper, there's a desensitization of guns. You know, what happened to fists? Why is the first go-to your gun? You know, we make guns available too easy, and we make the use of guns, we glorify them. We glorify them in movies. We glorify them on television. We glorify them on video games. This society as a whole, and I'm not even talking about black kids alone, you know. There's plenty of white people who, you know, have their gun cabinets and do all their hunting, and you're going to have to take my gun from my cold, dead hands, and these people who are preppers. There mm-hmm. is a love affair that this country has with firearms. And that's just the bottom line.
And I think a big part of it is not just the easy access to these weapons that people can get to these guns. It's the fact that everyone is afraid to fight. I will guarantee anyone any amount of money Trayvon Martin would be alive today if George Zimmerman knew how to fight, could actually fight. Because if he was getting the best of Trayvon Martin, he would have not had a reason to pull out his gun. So I have no doubt, in my mind he was getting his ass whooped. But again, stay the F and R and you don't get it. We don't end up where we are now.
I'm from, you know, despite the fact that I'm 25, you know, I grew up in the 80s, and, you know, there was a lot of gun violence when I was a teenager. But I'm still of the school where I will fight you fist to fist. And with that comes the possibility that I'm going to get my ass beat. But that's
slim possibility that there is.
Very slim, very slim. Because, you know, I roll with hot quarters.
Right.
And a wool sock. But you know what? If I'm big and bad enough to get up in your face, I'm big and bad enough to get my ass whooped. Now, am I going to go home and get my gun? I don't have a gun. But if I did, am I going to go home and get my gun? No. I picked a fight. I lost. Sends the brakes. Come home and get my girls. But
right. You might get your girls. But this is 2014. You can call them on your cell phone. But I mean, let's be realistic. You've got every opportunity to leave the scene, and you don't avail yourself of that possibility or that option. What happens after that is your own fault. Very young kid.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know,
not even a teenager. Right. I was not even a teenager when my father said to me, when someone tells you, if you're about to fight someone and they tell you, okay, I'll be back, you leave.
Don't be there when they get back.
Don't be there when they come back. If they have the opportunity to leave, don't stand. If they don't have to say anything, don't stand there and gloat. If you whip their butt and they leave, you leave. If you have the opportunity to leave, you leave. So I'm going
to
leave.
You know what? I was taught the same thing, and I was also taught that you don't have to beat somebody within an inch of their life. You know, once they're down, they're down. You ain't have to start slamming their head in the concrete and kicking them in the ribs and whatever. You've won. Walk away. Let it be done. I'm sad.
I'm also going to do the Al Bundy thing. My favorite Married with Children episodes, they were stuck on the highway. And they were singing in their car, right? The whole Bundy clan. And there was a family beside them who told them to stop singing because they were all frustrated, stuck in this traffic jam for hours. And they get out the car to jaw jack back and forth. And the guy walked to Al to say something, and Al Bundy just jumps on him and starts pummeling him. And the whole Bundy clan starts jumping on the other family. They're all whipping their behinds. And then they go get in the cars when they think traffic is going to move because they're going to leave. You know, they're not going to stand there and jawjack anymore. You're going to leave. You get in the first punch, you get in the last punch, and then you leave. If you take a whooping, you deserve a whooping.
Right.
Just that simple. It's just that simple. But to me, the whole bigger issue right now, Kamal, is we in America, all of us in America, are being divided along color lines.
Still, and in 2014.
Exactly. And it's not always necessary. But when it's obvious, you shouldn't be afraid to call it what it is, no matter what side of the fence you're on, no matter what side of the line you're on, no matter what color you are. You can't say, oh, if it was white kids, it would have been, he would have still done the same thing, when you know obviously he wouldn't. Did you know obviously he would not, there would have been no problem finding him guilty of attempt of first degree murder. There's a double standard in this country, and it's okay for a white person to be afraid of black people, but it's not okay for black people to achieve around equally as proficient white people. To national politics, and I am so tired of hearing Republicans refer to President Obama's administration as the imperialistic presidency. What is imperialistic about this president? What is imperialistic?
W stood up there and said, I'm the decider. You know, he made a very
last time
that what he says goes.
What he says goes. And the last time I checked, and trust me, I checked this a lot because sometimes I think, maybe I am crazy. But last time I checked, emperors are not elected. And President Obama was elected twice by the people of this country. So no matter what he does,
over half,
he cannot be, well over half, definitely more than 47%.
So what his administration does, he's doing it with the will of the people behind him. You can't call him an imperialist or an emperor when he is doing the will of the people. And just because you don't like it, I don't remember anybody on either side of the aisle calling George W. Bush an imperialist dictator, a communist.
Well, not only that, there's over 500 people on Capitol Hill standing in his way.
Yes.
You know, he can't be the decider, the imperialist about anything as long as John Boehner is in the way.
And John Boehner is not a check and balance. He's not even a speed bump. He is a wall. He is a wall who's standing. Him and Mitch McConnell do not want anything this president attempts to do to work.
And let's be clear on the stuff that this imperialist is trying to do. What is he doing that's going to harm this country? That's the real question. It's not like, you know, he's using his quote-unquote imperialist dictator powers to take every gun out of everybody's household, to demand that people only have two babies. Oh, my God, health care for everyone? Wow, he's such an awful dictator.
Raising of the minimum wage to a living, close to a living wage. Not even close.
Do people understand what $10 an hour equals? That's $20,000 a year. We can't even pay people $20,000 a year? Seriously, right now? And their rent is $500, $600, $700 a month. You do the math. How much does that come out to? Gas is $3-something a gallon. And then there's a movie.
If you can afford
gas.
A car.
If you can afford to get a car. There's a grassroots movement out here in Seattle to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour.
Oh my God.
Wow, we want to pay people $30,000 a year? Oh my God!
Well, wait a minute. You know, you gotta raise the minimum wage in Washington State so you can afford the legal marijuana.
Yeah, there is that, and you know, and let's talk about Holder while we're at it. You know, because Holder is in there mixing it up. You know, he's doing some really progressive stuff. So I suspect that Daryl Issa is going to do the Fast and Furious crap again.
Yep.
You know, Holder is trying to improve the tax laws so these people who sell marijuana can stop being a cash-only business, which means more tax money for this country. God forbid. Crazy. You know, people don't think, they don't do the math. $10 an hour is $20,000 a year. I can't live off of that. But if I was making $6 an hour, that I really could. And what are people going to do? You know, let's say they're making $6 an hour. They end up, the minimum wage goes up to 10. What do you think people are going to do with that extra $4 an hour? They're going to go out and they're going to buy something. They're going to buy more groceries. They're going to pump more money into the economy. They're going to buy more groceries. They're probably going to buy, you know, that little computer that they've been wanting to buy for their kids.
More money, you spend more money. It's what you do. And you may have something to save, but we're trying to get people to not save money, right? We're trying to get people to spend to help the economy continue to roll. And if you keep making people earn less and you say, well, we'll drop down so they have to raise the cost of their products and services.
Oh, my God. So they don't make $2 billion a year. They make $1.5 billion. Oh, please, the inhumanity.
And we all understand that when the cost of business goes up, the cost is translated onto the consumer. But I remember clearly, and I'm sure you remember clearly, when going to McDonald's was a treat. A lot of people treat McDonald's as regular dinner or any other fast food restaurant as regular dinner today. And I'm not begrudging those people who do that, but I'm just saying, in the day, going to McDonald's was a treat. And McDonald's did not cost an arm and a leg. But now, of course, the cost of beef has gone up. McDonald's has grown exponentially. But the whole idea of fast food and some assembly line food, the idea was to mass produce good nutritional food for the masses and get it out the door quickly and get as much food prepared as cheaply as possible and sold as cheaply as possible. So it was about volume. So a 40 or 50 cents cheeseburger at McDonald's is cheap, but if you sell billions of them, then you make a lot of money. Now the idea is we're trying to make a lot of money. It is not so much about a cheap product. It's about making a lot of money. So I don't even know if McDonald's is franchised anymore, which was the whole idea to begin with. I think it's now just a big conglomerate, a big corporation. But if
there's,
I'm going to push...
There's some owner-operated and there's some franchise. And that's why the price will vary. Like, in the same city, the price will vary between one McDonald's and the other because one might be owner-operated and the other is franchise-operated.
Okay. So even at that, you're no longer trying to get a good product prepared and so cheaply to sell a lot of them. Now you're just trying to make a lot of money, as much money as possible, off of a deal is cheap to produce and cook, but you're selling at a higher price point to keep making more money. So if you're willing to raise the price, to inflate the price, to add more profits, then you can still inflate the price to pay your people a decent wage. And the sad thing about it is you're going to find people who are going to be more than happy to pay that, to work for the below minimum wage or a low minimum wage in order for them to have some income coming in. And a lot of the immigrants, a lot of the illegal aliens, and the first-generation people are here. And they'll work at McDonald's for nothing.
Well, and not only that, I mean, all these people screaming. Remember what a big deal it was when Starbucks provided medical benefits, for people who were working less than 40 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
You could go to Starbucks and get a job and get benefits working 25 hours a week. And people were just screaming, oh, blah. Starbucks is still here. They're very profitable. Costco.
And is making money and growing. Yep, Costco too.
Can be done, you know. It's not going to break the economy if you do it.
Matter of fact, it'll improve the economy.
it'll improve the economy. And you know what? I mean, who really needs to have a profit of $3 billion a year? I mean, seriously.
It's the same deal. The same deal. If we raise minimum wage, we're going to be negatively impacting the economy. Is the same line as I thought I saw a shotgun stuck out the window. That's why I shot at the car. It's a bullcrap.
It's fear mongering.
It is. Because the real bottom line is, like you said, the profits. The rich people want to stay rich, which I don't blame you. If I was rich, I want to stay rich. But how much is not enough?
Right. You know, I don't begrudge the 1% for their ability to make money. But I want them to pay their fair share of the pie, and I want them to stop. You know, recently a lot of these 1%ers have been coming out and being real smug and nasty about it, and you wonder why people hate them. I'm not going to come to your house and personally go into your checking account and take your money. But you know what? Can you pay more than zero in taxes? I mean, I'm just asking. Can you stop offshoring your accounts so you don't have to pay taxes? Because let's be real, what was the tax rate in the 70s and 60s on businesses?
What, 2-3%?
50, 60. No. Right.
No, that's right. I'm sorry. You're right. It was 60%. Right.
It was at one point, I think it had gotten up to 70%. And guess what? Some of those companies are still here. They didn't go under.
Not only are they still here and they're profiting mightily, and McDonald's is in no danger of going out of business. Burger King, fast food restaurants wouldn't be popping up and doing boffo business if it was a bad business to be in. You know, we have all these little non-corporate fast food restaurants coming up nowadays. You know, large ones.
And until they can start building grocery stores in poor neighborhoods, McDonald's and Papa Murphy's and insert food franchise is not going anywhere. Because in a lot of poor neighborhoods, there are no grocery stores. There's little Vegas and maybe little mom and pop. And, you know, some places, they are like third-tier grocery stores that have rotten produce in them. I mean, there's one not far from me, and I've gone in there a couple times and just seen rotten tomatoes. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
They show that movie?
Right. And everything in the store costs more because it's not a franchise. But they built a low-income housing there, and so and these people don't have cars, so they really can't drive. They can't walk the 2 miles that they need to go to Safeway, because actually Safeway is 3.5 miles away from this grocery store. Because these are people who just, you know, don't have the means. And thank God there is a grocery store, and there isn't a fast food restaurant. There's a grocery store. But, you know, my husband always says, it's expensive to be poor.
Mm-hmm.
So they need they need franchises, you know, an Albertsons or Safeway or, you know, Piggly Wiggly, whatever you call them, to come into these poor neighborhoods so people don't have to rely on. And, you know, you wonder why the obesity rate is so high in poor communities. It's not because these people are lazy and just sitting on their ass all day. It's because they don't have transportation. They're not making $10 an hour. So they can go to the grocery store and buy chicken, a pack of chicken, which is running like $14 now. That was a shell shock for me. I went to buy a pack of drumsticks, and there's 16 drumsticks in there, and that was $17. I was like, the hell?
Now,
you know,
there is, Okay, so this question just came up to me today in the store. I was in BJ's today, BJ's Wholesale or BJ's Warehouse, whatever they call it now.
And I was asked
how long had I been a BJ's member, and I had to look at my card. I've been a BJ's member since 1995, and I became a BJ's member when my friend, my late friend Dell, was working there part-time. She said, come to BJ's. I had never been to BJ's, didn't know anything about BJ's, and I'm still upset because I thought it meant something else when you got a membership. But anyway, I digress. I got my membership in 1995, and I've been spending money in BJ's like there's nobody's business. I love BJ's, okay? So today I'm in BJ's, and I'm looking for something, and up in the aisle where all the salad dressings and condiments and pickles and all are, and I see golden spicy mustard, 2-pack for $4.49. And I said, I need mustard, but I don't need it today. I think I got enough at home. So I left there, ran some other errands, and then realized, oh, you know what? I need bouillon cubes. This is a lot of detail, America. I know you don't want to hear, but I need bouillon cubes. So there's a non-gigantic grocery store chain, Price Right, that's on my way home today. So I go in there to get the bouillon cubes. I'm looking for the bouillon cubes, and I go past the aisle that has the ketchup and mustard and stuff. And I'm in that aisle, and I see golden spicy mustard, 99 cents for one. Same size as at BJ's. Now, they're building a Price Right about a mile and a half from here. It's the first grocery store built in this neighborhood since, well, I'm not going to say it's built, but it's going to be the first grocery store in this neighborhood since the early 80s.
Are you kidding me right now?
No.
Wow.
A little further down in the other direction, they put a Shoppers food warehouse, and they have a Target that has groceries. But in this neighborhood where my house is, this is the first grocery store we'll have in this neighborhood since the 80s. And it's going to be a Price Right. And you're right. Their vegetable selection is not the same as a Safeway or a Giant Food or a Wegmans. Definitely not like a Wegmans, you know. But pricing on some of the things, the comparable stuff, is so much better. So that same pack of chicken legs that you were talking about, and I always check the chicken leg, your drumsticks, because I have a seal meal thing, vacuum suck it thing. And I always catch those on sale. You get that big pack of chicken wings and chicken legs. Either one is usually around $8.41 for that big pack. I call it the rack of wings. You go to Giant, that same rack of wings, and they're Purdue wings. That same rack of Purdue wings is $14, $15, $16. Problem is, if you have these stores few and far between, it takes an effort to get to them.
And right.
I don't have a car because I'm making a minimum wage, and I can't get there unless I'm on the bus. It makes it harder for me to be able to afford that food. And again, to your point, right across the street from where this store is being built, and they've been building this store. They've been building this store I've been living in this neighborhood now since 2002. It's my 12th year in my neighborhood. They've been building this store for the last 7 or 8 years. They would start a store. They cleared the land, and then that fell out. Then they
they dug a giant hole, big foundation hole, and then the housing market went up, the economy tanked, and that hole was there forever. And now they're actually putting walls up, and they're painting and doing what they got to do. So this thing's going to be here. This one's going to be real. But right across the street from there is a what we have here, New York Fried Chicken. And across and other corner is a liquor store. Up the street from me, within walking distance from me, is which is the comical thing of all my friends who visit my house, is we have a Kennedy Fried Chicken, KFC, you know, which is the knockoff of like McDougal's on Coming to America. But we've got all of those, and it's easier to go to Kennedy Fried Chicken or New York Fried Chicken, and down the street they have a Hip Hop Fried Chicken. I mean, there's all these chicken spots. So it's easier to get to those places and pay what you got to pay for that than to go to a grocery store and cook a meal. And a lot of these kids today are not learning how to actually cook a meal.
Well, and I mean, to your point, I mean, when I go grocery shopping, I don't go to just one store. I'm blessed that I have a car, and I'm blessed that I have a job that pays me well enough that I can go to Safeway and say, oh, hell no, I'm not paying $17 for this pack of chicken. I'm going over to Fred Meyer's, or I'm going over to QFC. You know, one franchise has better vegetables and produce, so I go there for that. And then I get the meat at this place, and I get the stuff at here, and then I run up to the Costco to get the bulk. But, you know, I'm blessed. There are millions of people who cannot do that. It's crazy.
And even if they have the money to afford that chicken or that store, if they don't find what they want at that store, they may not have the means to get to the other store.
Exactly. Before the hour closes out, can I just ask this one quick question? Is there anybody in New Jersey who who is not in Chris Christie's circle? I just need to know that, because more allegations came out this week. Now it's the Port Authority police that are involved. I mean, is there just like, every time the story comes on, I just start hearing the Godfather music, because it's like, is there anybody who is not family with quotes? You know what I mean?
He's got his people attacking everybody that has anything to say negative about the whole situation, which is funny to me. If he were completely innocent, it would be he's completely innocent.
The Port Authority, the lobbyists, the attorneys, the city attorneys, the attorney general, all of them. Oh, yeah. I grew up with Chris. We went to high school together. I coach his kids. I mean, seriously?
He's even got the attorney general investigating the mayor of Fort Lee.
Right.
The person who was done harm by his people or him is being investigated.
Right, and the other mayor, Zimmer, she's under investigation.
Yeah, she's under investigation. How dare you be besmirched by me?
When this house of cards falls, they're going to have special elections for, like, the top 17 people in the state. The governor, the lieutenant governor, the treasurer, the secretary,
the person who empties the trash cans is under investigation.
Right. I'm telling you, man, you need to watch Steve Kornacki. Everybody is in Christie's organization. Everybody he went to school with since kindergarten is in his organization.
But he doesn't talk to any of them. So.
Nope. No, I ain't talked to him since 1987. Well, he was coaching your son last year. Yeah, but we didn't talk.
We talked. I just had my administration create a job for him, but I don't really know him.
I don't know him. Crazy.
All right, young lady, we will do this again in 7 days.
Six.
Five.
All right.
7 days. 7 days.
All right, man. Love you. Talk to you later.
I slam a lot of bacon, my sister.
I plan to.
Hate you.